From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in the summer of 2015 when a community uproar forced new attention on a racist piece of art at Ontario Beach Park. The art was on a panel sitting atop the popular Denzel Carousel, and it has been there from the beginning. It was a depiction of a black child in a demeaning and dehumanizing fashion popular more than 100 years ago. In the spring of 2016, the panel was finally taken down. And now, 2 years later, local political leaders announced that they are working with the Take It Down Committee to determine a suitable replacement. Mayor Lovely Warren joined a group announcing that the new panel will feature an image of a Black Panther, long associated with black empowerment. Artists have until May 13th to submit their ideas or sketches, and one will be chosen for the new panel, measuring roughly 2 feet by 4 feet. This announcement sparked waves of both praise and some unfortunately predictable criticism and racism. In the dark corners of the internet, some ugly racism has come surging forth over this announcement. We're going to address that coming up. But first, let me welcome our guests for the hour. Howard Eagle is back in studio with us, a member of the Take It Down Planning Committee and the Movement for Anti-Racist Ministry and Action. Howard, welcome back to the program.
Thank you for having us, Evan.
Minister Clifford Florence is here, President of Faith Community Alliance. Minister Florence, always good to have you. Thank you.
Thank you.
And also with us is Catherine Morano Santos, who's Senior Director for Collections and Exhibits at the Rochester Museum and Science Center, and remind them why the Science Center is involved in this discussion.
So the Rochester Museum and Science Center is involved in the conversation because museums are really adapting into new roles today. And one of those is about democratizing access to educational resources and also using the museum as a platform for communities to tell their own stories and have a better understanding of a more complete history that we haven't always told in museums. So part of that is partnering between the City of Rochester, the Take It Down Planning Committee, and the Rochester Museum and Science Center in order to bring forth this exhibit, Take It Down, Organizing Against Racism, that uses the carousel panel that was put up at the carousel for a very racist intention, transforming that into an anti-racist teaching tool.
All right. Well, I'm just reading some of the comments that have come in online. And Howard and I were talking before the program and said, we wish we could be surprised. It's not surprising to you to see some of the racism, is it?
No, not at this point. We know that racism is so deeply embedded in the fabric of this society that it's reflected in all the major institutions. And, of course, it's reflected in the mindset and the attitudes and the belief systems and the behaviors of many of us who, or all of us probably to some extent, who grow up in this society, who are born and raised into this kind of society and are socialized in a way that it becomes impossible to escape the impact of racism.
Well, let's talk about some of the reasons behind a Black Panther, and we will address two of the main points of criticism I see, which is that apart from the obviously ugly racism, you see some people saying, number one, are you capitalizing off the recent commercial success of the image of Black Panther, of course, in a film? Or number two, is this evoking the 1964 Black Panther Party, which some people, you know, sort of feel is problematic in its own way? So let's, before we get to those two questions, let's start with why Black Panther and let's go around the table. I'll start with you, Howard.
Well, you mentioned, Evan, that the Black Panther has long been a symbol of empowerment, but it actually has long been a symbol of democracy, of equality, of justice. People don't know the history behind the Black Panther as a symbol for black people. If we want to understand the history, we go back to 1965, Lowndes County, Alabama, in which at the time, 80% of the population in that county were black people. But you know how many were registered to vote? Zero. So Stokely Carmichael and the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, which was like the student arm of Dr. King's organization, the student arm of Southern Christian Leadership Conference, went down to Lowndes County, Alabama, and organized people under the threat of death to register to vote. This is 1965, not 1865, but 100 years after the end of the Civil War in Lowndes County, Alabama. So what they ended up doing is setting up what was called the Lowndes County Freedom Organization. And it also became known as the Black Panther Party, the first Black Panther Party. And that's because they chose as their symbol in sort of opposition, I guess, to the rooster, which the Democratic Party was using at the time as its symbol, they chose the Black Panther as their symbol. And that existed before the Black Panther Party, really, of 1966, which is the one that people think of first. And that it evolved from the original Black Panther Party that existed in Lowndes County, Alabama. What we want people to understand is that we're not exploiting the recent commercialism around the Black Panther movie and so forth. But at the same time, we're not ignoring that. Anything that has that kind of mass appeal, especially to our youth, we want to pay attention to. But we had the idea of an animal, because remember, the only thing that even resembled some form of humanity on the carousel before we took it down was the panel that we're discussing. And everything else there is an animal. So as we began to contemplate what would come next after the panel came down, almost immediately people began to talk about animals that are indigenous to the African continent or that are significant to African people. And the lion and the panther were the first two that people talked about. So it was way before we knew anything about the Black Panther movie. And so I'll stop and ask my colleagues to add in terms of anything that I left out.
All right, Minister Florence?
No, concur with Howard, because we were discussing this with the community long before the movie came out, but certainly it was an exciting choice from our point of view, because it was relevant, because it came from the community, and we could not say no to the community if this was something that they would support, and certainly they did, and the process has taken off very well, and we're excited about it. And I think it also, as Howard mentions, opens up conversation. May they be neutral, may they be for or against. We're always interested in having conversation, because that's how we grow with this very explosive subject, but it's one we need to have. And I believe if we can confront it, we can deal with it.
And Catherine, how do you feel about Black Panther as a choice and historical connections there?
Well, from the museum point of view, what's interesting about this project is that it's really education for action. And I think that's something very unique and kind of takes the museum to the next level in terms of the way that we relate to the community and act on behalf of the community. So this entire project has had very different mechanics from many other exhibit development projects. We're very used to museums being producers and curators of content. In this case, we were really facilitators and coordinators for the community voice to shine through. So in this case, we were deferring to the community for the selection of the animal. It was very important everyone knew that it be an animal for the reasons that are already stated. But we really are supportive of whatever the community wanted to replace in terms of the artwork.
All right, so listeners, I want to appeal to you. If you've got questions or comments about this, I want to hear from you, and let's have a dialogue about that, because I know there's been some pushback or some questions, and part of what the committee is trying to do is have an education of the community. So you can call the program. It's 844-295-TALK. That's toll-free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. How do you feel about the selection of the image of a Black Panther for the panel that used to be that racist panel that became so heated in this community? So tell us, first of all, how you what you think about that. And if you've got questions or comments about that choice, now is a great time to do that. I want to talk about the process now. So artists have until May 13th, my understanding, but what do we need to know about the process of how it's going to be selected and what people should know? Catherine?
That's right. So submissions are due on May 13th. Anyone is welcome to submit a rendering of the Black Panther, and that can be a sketch in any medium. You could submit via hard copy proposal that you could deliver to the front desk of the museum at 657 East Avenue, or you can send it by email to my email address, which is kmurano, K-M-U-R-A-N-O, at rmsc.org. And we're also looking for images that reflect finished pieces of artwork by the artist as well.
How many submissions so far? How many do you expect to get? Any idea?
So we have about only 5 so far. We do hope to at least triple that number. Obviously, the more we have, the better we can make the selection.
And again, who is going to select the final winner?
So there's a committee that's going to be convening on May 18th, and that's going to be cross-representational of the City of Rochester, the Take It Down Planning Committee, and the Rochester Museum and Science Center, and people that have already been involved in this conversation relative to the replacement artwork. And then on, they will determine the finalists, and then on May 19th, there's going to be an open voting session at Central Church of Christ. We're still pinning down the exact timing of that, but the entire community will be invited to come and vote from the finalists.
Okay. Let's start working through some of the feedback. And we're going to start with phone calls. We've got plenty of online comments as well, and you can email the program at connections@wxxi.org. I'm going to start with Gary. Go ahead, Gary.
Hi, Evan. Thanks for having this show. And I just want to say, and for people that don't know, my name is Gary Putoff, and I worked with Howard and the minister on this. We started this conversation about the carousel long before the movie. So I just want people to know that, yes, that this was idea to replace this with something that was relevant to the community. And the Black Panther was in discussion, you know, long before the movie. And I want to say to people, like, you know, when this issue first started, I kind of wondered, too, what is the issue? But when you look at that panel and the number of theirs, I mean, you can't not help but walk away and say, this is clearly racist. And I just want to say this as an older white guy and a retired police officer. Yes, the Black Panthers and the police had some real problems in the past. But what we have to do is understand that a symbol or a name can be more than one thing. The past is the past. It's time to move on. And people need to appreciate the symbolism there. And get past that negativity. And I think that some of the negativity and negative comments that are being made are for deeper reasons other than that symbol itself. So you know what? I just want to congratulate Howard and the minister and all the work that they did. This is something that needed to be done, and that we need to support the community in their choice. Thank you.
Hey, Gary, can you stay there for one second?
Yeah, sure.
From your law enforcement perspective, let me just ask this, and then I'll turn it over to our panel here. As you say, there's one symbol. It's not just one thing. A Black Panther is not just representative of the recent film or the comic book series or anything associated with the entertainment from Marvel. A Black Panther is not just the political party that formed in the 1960s. It goes back and it's got different roots. And frankly, it's one of the reasons I always appreciate the conversation from Howard, because I always learn something. But do you, in your law enforcement perspective, expect your colleagues in law enforcement to view a Black Panther as anything negative, given some of the clashes they had with the party in the 1960s, Gary?
Look, clearly there were clashes, and clearly the Black Panthers said some things about the police that were derogatory. But look, there's a lot of wrong on both sides, and there was a lot of right on both sides. You know, will there be people in law enforcement that will just look at this and be upset? Yeah, there will. But you know what? That doesn't mean that we have to, that we stop making progress, that we don't put this in the past. I mean, both sides have to look at this and say, look, mistakes were made. And I understand why the Black Panthers did what they did and why they said that they did. Look, these were people that were oppressed, and the police were really an occupying force. The police are not what they were back then. The Black Panthers are not what they were back then. I just hope we make progress and get past this. And actually, that's one reason I'm glad it's a Black Panther. I'm happy for that, because maybe, if it sparks this discussion and it brings us to a point where we can put the past behind us, and I'm not saying forget the past. Howard is 100% right. We need to remember that. We need to remember where we were, but that will help us get to where we need to go. So I'm happy it's that, and I'm glad that this conversation has taken place.
Gary, thanks for the phone call. And to Gary's point there on remembering the past versus forgetting the past, the organization from the beginning didn't say take it down and burn this panel and never remember it. They were saying take it down, put it in a place where we can educate people about the history of racism, which is what the Science Center has stepped in to help do. And I think that's similar to Gary's spirit of remembering history, not saying forget it. So let's get some feedback from our panelists. I'll start with you, Howard. Go ahead.
Yeah, Gary, thank you so much for your ongoing support, for your early support and ongoing support. Please put May 19th on your calendar. We'll be at Central Church of Christ. Details will be forthcoming. It'll be great to see you and all the people who work with us to get this done, the initial phase. It would be great to see you. Hopefully you'll join us. Thanks again. Now, again, we can't emphasize enough, and we keep sort of repeating it, the power of the object, both the panel that has been taken down and the replacement panel, is that they are teaching tools. They help us to perpetuate this discussion that we all seem to agree we need to have. Now, I got to mention something about the Black Panther Party of 1966, the one started by Huey Newton. People don't know all of that history, Gary. Right away, when many people think about the Black Panther Party, the one that was formed in California in 1966, their minds go to hate and violence and so forth. But people don't remember the good that that party did. They had the first free breakfast program in the nation. They had benefit counseling. They had consumer education classes. They had community health classes. They had free dental programs, free food programs, GED classes. This is real work that the Black Panther Party did all over the nation. And part of the reason why they took the position that they must do the work is because it was things that the government was not doing. And so they did a lot of good in the community. And we must be honest about the historical record. Much of the violence that occurred was not started by the Black Panthers themselves. I don't know, Gary, if you and others remember who Fred Hampton is. Fred Hampton was killed in his bed as he was sleeping, and he was not the only Black Panther who was murdered during the 1960s without any logical explanation, even until this date. People may or may not know the history of COINTELPRO, the counterintelligence program launched under J. Edgar Hoover, in which particular organizations, Black organizations, were targeted intentionally in order to diffuse the power that was beginning to accumulate in the community because of their organizing skills. So the Black Panthers, the Nation of Islam, and even the NAACP at that point, and Dr. King's organization, SCLC, with the belief and notion being on the part of J. Edgar Hoover that we could not, these are his words, I'm paraphrasing, but basically he said, we cannot allow a Black Messiah to arise in the community that can unite all of the various elements that are working for liberation.
Okay. Minister Florence, what would you want to say to Gary about his phone call?
Well, certainly, Gary, we appreciate your support, and we hope that it will continue. But the educational piece is so important because the community very rarely gets heard from in a way that actions support what the community wants. And we are celebrating with the community that we've got a needed victory in this area. But now the response that we're looking for is to have the community come together to talk about the educational progress that we need to make, because it speaks to every relevant issue in the world, and particularly now in the history of Rochester, with the prevailing poverty and poor housing and no jobs and the millions of dollars, billions of dollars that have come in to address poverty here in the city, and these issues of institutional, structural, and individual racism is real in the city. And the red lines are still drawn. They might be a little dull, but those who are being impacted by the negativity of these issues, particularly with Blacks, Latinos, Native Americans, and our immigrant community, leaving out no nationality. We have some real issues that we need to face with racism, and education alone is just a step. It may be a baby step for some, but we really need to engage the powers and speak truth to them as it relates to this needed discussion on racism. We can't bury our heads in the sand. We can't say it doesn't exist. There are myriad of examples right here in this county, in this state, and right here in our city that we need to get busy to not only bring down a panel, but we need to bring down the powers that support racism to continue.
And Catherine, one of the local artists listening to this program emailed to say, can you give the email address again, how the artist can get in touch for submitting a piece of art for this?
Sure. My email is kmurano@ rmsc.org. And I'd also like to invite everyone to take a look at rmsc.org/carousel, where all of the requirements are listed on our webpage, and you'll also see the submission details there.
Sticking with the theme of things I did not know about the term Black Panther and the Black Panther Party, Radiolab had an episode they called The Gun Show with the history of gun rights in this country. And the Second Amendment was sort of ignored for about 200 years. It was kind of viewed to be about militias. And then the Black Panther Party said, look, we are allowed to carry arms. And who was it? It was a white Californian governor named Ronald Reagan, who was saying, and you'll hear the sound if you listen to the episode, where they're saying, you know, well, we don't need people just, you know, carrying guns out in public, largely in response to black people carrying guns. And the Black Panther Party were some of the, from understanding from this episode, Howard, some of the first to actually make the claim that you can't just selectively apply the law with gun rights.
Absolutely, no doubt about it. I mentioned Huey Newton. I should have also mentioned Bobby Seale, who's still alive. Bobby Seale is alive, and I believe living in Philadelphia. They were the co-founders of the Black Panther Party. And the position that they took in terms of carrying guns, and by the way, we know, if we're honest, that's what really scared white America to death. That white America had never seen anything like that. Bobby Seale, Huey Newton, and others talked about the fact that they had the gun in one hand and the Constitution in the other. So they understood what they were doing, what their constitutional rights were, and the position was that they must police the police because of the things that the police was doing in the black community all over the nation at that time. Gary mentioned the police are not what they used to be, but we know that the police used to engage in some pretty vicious behavior throughout the nation in black communities. In fact, we remember the Warner Commission report that said all the rebellions and uprisings that took place in the country in the 1960s, that at the foundation of that was police brutality. That was the Warren Commission. So absolutely, they understood their rights in terms of carrying guns and weapons and so forth, and people sort of made up things about what that was about. People made up things that they wanted to kill white people and so forth, and that was not in their philosophy. It was not in their program. It was not in their actions until it became time to defend themselves. That's one thing that they made clear, is that if we are attacked, we will defend ourselves, and they did. And there's even records. I'm not making this stuff up. For your listening audience, if you want to learn more about the things I'm saying, go and purchase a book called The FBI Files. It has much of this information in it. For a long time, much of the information that was in that book was classified. It wasn't even available to the public. But the book has been out a couple decades now, I believe. And you could read more about the things I'm mentioning.
All right, let's get our only break of the hour. When we come back, we'll come back to more of your phone calls and feedback as we talk about the plans for the new panel of art that will be placed at the Denzel Carousel at Ontario Beach Park. By the way, the carousel itself has had some technical problems. It was shut down late last summer and may not be up and running again for a little while, but I know they're working on that. But regardless, the art for the new panel, you got until May 13th to submit. If you want to email Catherine Morano Santos at the Rochester Museum and Science Center and get in touch with the Science Center, you can do that. And they're going to have a committee decide. And so then they'd like to see the new piece of art up as soon as possible after that. But it has to include an image of a Black Panther. So that will be a new piece of art that replaces the old racist art that was there on the panel and there at the carousel for more than 100 years. Our guest this hour, part of the Take It Down Planning Committee, Howard Eagle. He's also with the Movement for Anti-Racist Ministry and Action. Minister Clifford Florence is here with the president of the Faith Community Alliance in Rochester, and Catherine Morano Santos from the Rochester Museum and Science Center. We're right back with your phone calls next. Coming up in our second hour, we're talking about the high cost of dying. Do you know what it costs for a funeral? What it costs for the different vessels that you can choose to hold your loved ones when they pass away? What are the different options you have? When you don't have a lot of time to decide, it can feel like a lot of pressure and a very expensive situation. So how can you best prepare? We'll discuss it next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Before we continue our discussion and get back to your phone calls, I want to welcome our colleague, Gene Fisher. It was here to tell us just a little bit about what's going on this week and a big first day of our membership campaign. Hi, Jean.
Hi, that's right. This is New Member Monday on it's the May membership campaign that's starting in April. And anyone who becomes a new member today only, by calling 1-800-295-9994 or going online to wxxinews.org with that membership pledge, you're automatically going to have $100 added to your pledge thanks to the New Member Campaign Fund. These are people that are giving a little extra money to make sure that your pledge has that $100 gift added to it. And I want you to think for just a moment. We were talking during the break about how in listening to the program, people all around the station are nodding and they're saying, yeah, wow. And I was thinking that this is really one of the few places in Rochester where you can have this important conversation in a civil manner, in a polite manner, in a thoughtful manner, and an educational manner. I'm learning a lot of history today just by listening to a conversation that started about the panel at the carousel that was taken down, that needed to be taken down, and now it will be replaced by something very important. And if you are thinking to yourself, I really think that we need to have more of these kind of conversations. We need to make more of these kind of civil and civic connections. Then I hope you'll do your part to keep that happening. And that takes a membership pledge, a support of your public radio station, 1-800-295-9994. Or you can make that gift online at WXXI.org. And you're investing your dollars in important dialogue and in conversations that bring us together as a community. So I thank you. I thank all our guests for this conversation, and I thank you for your support. Once again, 1-800-295-9994 or WXXINews.org.
Thank you, Jean. It's first day, and we are talking about the plans for the Denzel Carousel and the new piece of art that will go there. And, you know, I couldn't help but think, I saw on Twitter, James writes to us about how Rochesterians view racism and inequality. Rochesterians, and I don't want to overgeneralize here, but people are going nuts over something that's happening in Nashville. The Nashville Predators hockey team is now offering smash plates, which look like our garbage plates, and people are just all over it. And James tries to add some context. He says, you know, if Rochester came together against local racism and inequality even half as hard as we did against a hockey team for hijacking the garbage plate, we would be unstoppable in this community. I think this is a pretty good point, James. It's a pretty good point. And that's part of the discussion this hour, is what to do in the wake of the racist piece of art that was taken down at the Denzel Carousel, what to replace it with. It's going to contain an image of a Black Panther, and local artists have until May 13th to submit on that. And I want to grab a phone call from another Howard Eagle, who is calling. Howard looked at me and said, go ahead, Howard.
The third.
Hey, hi. Morning, everybody. Good afternoon, rather.
Yeah.
Hello, my name is Howard James Eagle III, and I'm calling to say I do believe being a Black Panther is something to be proud of, as well as being a supporter of the Black Panther movement, because ultimately, you know, everyone makes mistakes, and that's an inevitable aspect of life. And once you get past that, you know, you can see that the Black Panthers stand for a greater cause. And so I was just calling to share my beliefs on that. And also to add that I'm very proud of my father and his success, and Mr. Florence and all his other colleagues. I'm very proud, and I can't wait to get involved. And that's what I was calling to say this morning.
Well, Howard III, thank you. Go ahead,
Howard. Yeah, I just want to thank Howard III. I mentioned to him you can listen live if you like, but I didn't put him up to call. I was surprised, son.
No, I saw the look on your face.
I really was surprised, genuinely so. Thank you for calling, Howard.
Howard, thank you. Sir. Thank you for that. Look, I'm saying yes, sir, by the way.
Yeah. It's not phony. He was taught that from the crib up, and he's retained it. he's retained that.
Thank you, Howard. And Howard III calls to mention he's proud of being a Black Panther and the image of a Black Panther. And during our brief break, Howard and Catherine raising a point that, you know, when we look at the history of the Black Panther Party, the actual full name of the political party isn't always mentioned. So what's the full name?
Actually, Catherine was saying, Howard, you think you know so much history. You don't really know.
Got our own historian over here.
Yeah, I was just bringing up the point that the party's name was originally the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense, so that tells you a lot about the original intention. And I think, again, just getting at the fact that the history that we're taught in schools is not always a complete telling of
Absolutely.
That history, so it's important that we have these community conversations that not only talk about our feelings and the impact that we're experiencing today, but also try to correct some of that incomplete history by filling in some of the gaps.
All right. So, and Howard, what do you make of the name of that party and the context of what that name really meant?
The Black Panther Party for Self-Defense.
For self-defense.
It was literal. It was literal. Part of their philosophy was that they were going to police the police. They were going to observe the police and their actions in the community. They actually trained people how to do it. They didn't interfere. They didn't interfere with the police doing their work. They knew how many feet away from the activity the police were involved in they had to be. They knew that their weapons had to be carried in a certain way and so forth. They literally had constitutions, small constitutions, in their pockets and so forth. So the name was literal. It wasn't coincidental. It actually described the work that they were engaged in.
Well, and now I want to turn the conversation to the kind of feedback that has been popping up since the announcement. And it's the kind of feedback where some people just don't want to believe that something can be hurtful. Yeah, and you can see this in a lot of different places. Let me give you a couple of examples before we turn back to the panel here. First of all, there was a documentary called The Problem with Apu. Apu was a character on The Simpsons, the owner of a Quickie Mart, and voiced by a white guy, Hank Azaria, in a way that people of Indian descent felt was a caricature and offensive, and they did a really thoughtful documentary. Hank Azaria himself said last week on The Colbert Show he's had to rethink voicing the character, and he's not sure the directions they want to go. Well, The Simpsons creator said this weekend, you know, people just love to pretend they're offended. Pretend they're offended. That's one example. You know, just people can't believe that something could be hurtful. Now, take a look at in Pittsburgh, and this is from the Associated Press, the statue of O Susanna songwriter Stephen Foster will be moved over racial imagery. And I'm going to read from the Associated Press story here. A statue of Stephen Foster, the American songwriter best known for classics such as O Susanna and Camptown Races, was removed from a Pittsburgh park this week over concerns that it was racist. It's a 118-year-old, 1,000-pound statue that was removed from a plaza in Pittsburgh and taken to storage until it finds a different home. The move came after critics said the statue was demeaning because it showed a slave playing a banjo sitting at Foster's feet. The banjo player is based on Uncle Ned, a fictional slave and the subject of a song by the same name, according to NBC News. And critics of the statue had called it the single most offensive display of public art in Pittsburgh, hands down. One activist said it permanently depicts the black man at the white man's feet. The Foster statue will be replaced with a statue honoring an African-American woman. And the city is currently accepting nominees for who will be depicted by a new statue. That sounds very similar here, doesn't
it? Sounds very much like our process. And since they're looking for a home for that statue, I can't speak for the museum, but I wish we could have it. They could maybe send it here, right? And we can use it as a teaching tool.
Yeah, I mean, it's so similar. And yet, if you read the comments, and again, I try not to read too many internet comments for my own sanity, but they're out there. People just don't believe. And I've got a long list of comments of people saying, how could this be offensive? I don't get it. You know, whether it's WROC's piece and their Facebook page, a Reddit thread, all kinds of things. People saying, I don't see why the original panel was offensive. Why do we need a Black Panther? And then they're saying far worse stuff. Yeah. Howard, as someone who works in education,
yes,
one thing that I think is a challenge that I see as someone who works in daily dialogue is some people just don't want to move off of a position. What do you think starts to move someone?
Yeah, so education is the key. But the really sad and in some ways a scary part of this is that many people who are saying that, they really mean it. They have no reference point for understanding. I mentioned earlier, because of the way people get socialized from the crib up, they have no reference point. So, of course, education becomes key. We all go through the educational institution. I like to mention Jane Elliott, an anti-racist who's been around. You remember the blue-eyed, brown-eyed experiment from the 1960s? Jane Elliott is well known in the anti-racist community. She mentions in one of her talks that she believes that we can end racism if we begin to tell the truth in the educational system. Now, I don't know if we can end it. It's so deep and so pervasive, but we absolutely can impact it. We're talking K-12. We're talking beginning with young people when they're 5 and 6 years old, so that we won't have to sit here 10 years from now and say they don't have a reference point. We can sit here and say everybody has a reference point. because we taught people the objective reality and the historical reality of how things developed in this thoroughly racist, white supremacist-based nation state. I'm not spewing hate or anything like that. This is objective fact. The nation, the foundation, the fabric of the nation is based on white supremacy. The economic system, the political system, the dominant cultural system is grounded in white supremacy. And we're still struggling with that until this very day. It will not magically disappear if we, at least I don't see anything in the historical record that would suggest that. If we as human beings, as caring human beings, don't work to change it, it will never change.
Minister Florence?
And then I think, to be honest with you, there's a perfidious spirit that exists when one talks about racism. First of all, we have to be honest that some people do not want to have an honest conversation about this. And the white pathology that really goes into why when something affects people other than Eurocentric people, they want to pass on having a frank discussion. But certainly if swastikas or other kind of images that are negative to European or white people, there is a clear message that continues that we can't go down that road because it's so painful, it's so hurtful. Well, if it's that vivid in the lives of whites, then we must have that same opportunity for Native Americans, Latinos, black people. And then the negative depiction of black children. And we know how every race feels about their children. Why would black people feel any different? So I think the white pathology, the disease that has not been researched among white people, we don't have a lot of research on why white people act the way they act and think the way they think. But mostly every other ethnic group has been studied, even to the pain of abuse. We really need to have a serious conversation, not only about a panel, but we really need to investigate the white pathology of white people. And that study needs to be documented so that we can have them included in the disease that they're suffering from, not wanting to face up to, and they're creating an epistemic injustice to marginalize black people's concerns and then elevate their concerns and their need that if they don't want to deal with it, then they get a pass and I wasn't back there then and don't bring me into this now. And, you know, you can't be that dismissive. You got to get into the frying pan and get where the fire is, and we got to work through this together.
And listeners, if you want to weigh in on that or anything else you're hearing this hour before the hour is out, you've got some time. 844-295-TALK. It's toll free. 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Ted in Farmington is next on the phone. Go ahead, Ted.
Well, that was very interesting. I'm very sorry, but the very previous speaker I have to disagree with, and specifically only because of the word disease. Disease is pathology, and and that word brings in some very negative connotations in terms of there's something physically wrong with white people, and I struggle with that. Now the speaker previous to that, whom I'm very sorry, don't know his name, but his comments around education and ignorance, I completely and totally support. It is about education. It is about ignorance. People who just cannot recognize the fact that there is this racial bias. And I am white. I've benefited from white privilege. The reason I called originally was simply because I was raised in the South, and experienced Southern racism, which is overt. When I moved to Rochester, it astonished me that people didn't recognize the racism here in the North that existed. It is as pervasive as the racism in the South. It's just that it is not recognized as racism. I mean, I've been here long enough to have lost my Southern accent. My wife will tell you I get it back whenever I speak to my friends down south. But I am just astonished at Northern racism.
So, Ted, can I ask you a quick question before our panel weighs in?
Absolutely.
Because I take that last point, you know, some of the most... So I guess I'd put it this way. Northeast in particular, and I'm going to overgeneralize here, but I'm going to do it for effect. Northeastern liberals love to feel like they're progressive, but we have some of the most self-segregated school districts, communities. People pat themselves on the back. And look, I'm sure I'm guilty. I'm certain I'm guilty of this too. But there is, what you're talking about is less of the overt racism that is obvious and ugly and more of the, oh no, we feel good about it. We don't do that stuff up here. And yet we perpetuate systems that hurt people.
Amen.
And this is what, but so I actually think in many ways, you and the minister who made the comment about a pathology or a disease may agree more than you disagree, because I think what Minister Florence is saying is that maybe it's, you know, advantage when it's baked into a group, when a group is protective of its power and privilege, we don't even see it when we are perpetuating it. We want to believe that we are eradicating it all while we are continuing it and entrenching it. And there is something that really does mirror a condition about that, at least from my perspective as a white guy. That's what I'm hearing from Minister Florence. And I don't hear that different from you. But what am I missing?
And I agree. I it's the word disease that I struggle with, not the concepts. Okay. Behind.
Okay. So stay there if you could, and let's let Minister Florence first, and I know Howard wants to respond. Go ahead. Go ahead, Minister.
Well, you know, it has to be dealt with. It's ingrained somewhere, and it has to come out if it's in there. And that's what disease points out. If there's something wrong in the physical body and it can be studied in the proper way, you can identify the origin of the problem. And we think this is a very important step in the educational process, because how do you get, honestly, help me understand this, how do you get people who are suffering with racism and perpetuating systems to keep it alive? And it can be invisible, but it's being seen. And when you look around this city, and as Evan pointed out, the reason that we have such concentrated poverty, and this, for example, came out that we are first to Chicago, Illinois. How does a city as small as Rochester is have the kind of concentrated poverty in a community where we are funder, filthy rich with money, resources, 241 service providers? How do we allow this kind of poverty among a particular race of people? Latinos, blacks, Native Americans, how does poverty stay there if there's not a disease in the white community where you can cover the same kind of issues in Brighton and in Pittsford and in other communities, even in our rural areas? How do you keep the mask over that and continue to get billions of dollars that are pointed to address issues in the black community, particularly the Crescent? We're talking over 50 or 60 years. So there is a pathology that needs to be treated. And if one is offended by this, get over it. The idea is we got to do what we got
to
do.
All right, so let's let Howard respond, and then we'll go back to you, Ted. Go ahead, Howard.
So, Ted, we really do have to examine whether or not it is a disease, whether or not racism is a disease, an illness. As a matter of fact, the American Medical Association has said that it is, that extreme racism is mental illness. That's the American Medical Association. But you said your objection is it implies that something's wrong with white people physically. And it's really more about something being wrong mentally and emotionally. And it's not restricted to white people. It's all of us. One of the foremost black scholars in the nation right now, Dr. Joy DeGruy, wrote a book titled Post-Traumatic Slave Syndrome. She talks about black people still suffering from the illnesses that have been passed down through generations from times of institutionalized slavery. And so the bottom line becomes we have internalized inferiority complex. So if you're born and raised in the same society as we are, And it is a white supremacist society, and everything you said, you have white privilege. Everything that you've learned from the crib up has reinforced that you are, quote unquote, superior. Why would you not have internalized superiority complex? See, this thing is deep. It's really deep, and it's why we, I'm glad you agree about the education. But I think that some of the education that we need is stuff that many of us have never, ever heard before. And so we need to set up places where we actually come and receive the education, right? It's one thing to say that we need it, but we actually, it's almost like treatment. It almost really is like treatment in some ways.
So let me just jump in and say, because Ted, I want to let you have a chance to respond, and then I've got to try to get through a couple of other calls, because all of a sudden we've got a lot of people who want to jump in. But please go ahead, Ted.
I won't keep you very long. Literally, this is why I love WXXI. I this is the kind of conversation that has to occur in order for people to learn. And I am not fully convinced disease is the word, but I certainly understand why you are using it, and I'm much less offended by it than I was just 5 minutes ago.
And I would love to add something to the conversation as well.
Ted, thank you so much, by the way. Go ahead, Catherine.
So science has shown that there's no biological basis for the concept of race. It's actually a human social construct. So although it does influence our lived experience today, it is an arbitrary physical trait that defines categories of people. So insofar as race is a social construct, I would say that this pathology of racism is a social disease.
And I would say to Ted, I admire your openness there. And I would just say, you know, people have asked me, how come you keep having Howard on? Howard's really hard on you. And I said, because he's often right. And, you know, there are times where Howard's hard on me and he's right.
The good news with Ted is he says, I'm less offended than I was 5 minutes ago. That's what we want.
That's progress.
That's progress. Real concrete, measurable progress. And that's what we want. We want to keep moving. Not only is racism a social construct and a social disease, if you will, but it's also an economic construct.
Absolutely.
It's a political construct.
Absolutely.
It's a cultural construct.
All right, so I'm going to rip through two more quick ones. Kevin Hicks, our friend, writes to the show and says, can you pass along that I think those who still ask why the panel was taken down at all should see it in its new setting as part of the Rochester Museum and Science Center exhibit. It is very powerful and educational. The North wasn't without its racism, just like the South, while that panel was at the Denzel Carousel as an example. So Kevin's saying, go to RMSC, see what they have done. I know everyone here says Kevin is absolutely right about that. And let me grab Junior in Newark. Go ahead, Junior. Got to keep it tight.
Yeah. Hi. Yeah. Okay. I was born in 1964. I'm 54 years old. And I grew up with racism in New York City. I've been in 17 states, but the worst state I've been in is down south in Florida. That racism continued all the way to 2000. And it's still continuing. I'm in a county right now called Penang. And there's racism like crazy up here. But what I'm trying to say is one thing. I just want our race, the Puerto Ricans, the blacks. My father was black. My mother was Puerto Rican, my stepfather. But we need to continue to teach our children, that the hate is not the way. We have a race where we got a lot of families teaching our children that we should hate those who hate us. And if we would stop that, then we can educate our children with an open mind. But when we start teaching them at a young age that you got to hate the white man, you got to hate the police, you got to hate authority, these kids are always going to have conflict, and this thing with racism is going to continue.
All right, so Junior, I got to roll because we're down to our last minute. I want Howard and the minister to respond about 30 seconds apiece.
Yeah, he's not wrong, but please be aware that some black people are not the only ones teaching their children to hate. Certainly white people are too. So we all need to stop that. That's what we're talking about. We need to move toward a new kind of education.
Okay, Minister Florence.
We also can't dismiss the rebellion that was in Rochester in the 60s, primarily it was caused because of police brutality, and that can't be dismissed in the history of this city. And we have to tell the history the way it is, and if we're going to make any progress, We're going to have to learn from our mistakes.
Junior, thank you for the phone call. Anne on Twitter says, great conversation this hour. I'm trying to discuss this with people in Wyoming County. It is so difficult and urgent, and your panel is inspiring. Deb writes and says, the conversations on the show today are all caps, so good. Thank you, Deb. I appreciate that. Really credit to the guests for pushing this conversation forward. And let me close by asking Catherine, if you're a local artist or you know local artists, the new panel has to depict a Black Panther. You've got until May 13th to submit. Where?
Yep, the best place to go is rmsc.org/carousel. You'll see all the details there.
All right, thank you for being here from the Rochester Museum and Science Center, which is helping lead the way with the exhibit with the old panel and now the new panel, and we'll see what happens. Howard, you want the community to know anything about?
Yes, May 19th. Put May 19th on your calendar, Central Church of Christ, 101 South Plymouth Avenue. I will be gathering to make the final choice in terms of what will go on the carousel. We want the community to participate.
All right.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you, Howard. He's a member of the Take It Down Planning Committee and the Movement for Anti-Racist Ministry in Action. And thanks to Minister Clifford Florence, President of the Faith Community Alliance. As always, Minister, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you very much.
Thanks again, Catherine.
Thank you so much.
And listeners, Monica and Brockport didn't have time to get you, just flooded toward the end of that program. But this is where the community needs to have these conversations. Thanks for doing it. Short break, more connections next.